and gentlemen, welcome to Wrestling Art with Chris Things.
Do the hammer lock.
Hi friends, hi there, you've stumbled onto another edition of Wrestling Art with Chris Things. I am Chris Things Brian, your host this week and every week, host, friend, art pal, whatever you want to call it really. I'm here talking in your ear holes, and we're on another match of the week edition of the show. At this point, you're probably thinking, hey, aren't we due for another Wrestling Art Curator edition? Well, I would agree with you, and I think we are very much due. I've got a few very talented wrestling artists out there that I've been hankering to have on the show for a little while now. So communications have been made, and I'm in the process of lining such a thing up. So, you know, hopefully you don't have too much longer to wait for that next one. But in the meantime, again, match of the week episode. We have James Vanderbeek joining us in a few moments to talk all about the tremendous professional wrestling match that was Big Bubba, aka Big Boss Man, teaming with Dr. Death, Steve Williams, in the 93 All Japan Real World Tag League, facing off against the Holy Demon Army of Toshiaki Kawada and Akira Taue. I have many things to say about how much I love this match. I hope you guys maybe watch the match before you proceed. If you haven't already, I think it'll bring a whole element more of fun to it. But, man, all right, well, we'll rave about that later. In the meantime, we have a little old What's Going On in the World of Chris Things intro monologue. I have been so bloody busy lately. Last week I was talking on location when I was in Melbourne, Australia, for those Lucha Fantastica shows. When I was down there, I got sick. So I had the first Melbourne show, which was pretty hectic. I had an early morning flight down that same day. I had to go out and get the hire car, get the table for the show, and get all set up. And these things, it just kind of feels like a mile a minute. And then we have two shows, just so you know, just like we have a daytime family show and then a nighttime adult Lucha Libre show. And yeah, I got through it and I was so tired. I think I spoke a little bit about it last week. And then through that week, I don't know if it's like, you know, this burning the candle at both ends business, but I got sick and I was originally intending on catching up and spending some good quality time that week with my nan. You know, she's getting into her golden years these days. But I was too sick to actually go over and see her. I didn't want to give her my germs. So I had a week where I was just on my my poor cousin's couch, hopefully not infecting them with my germs. And to make matters worse, I had to do my taxes. So I was sick. I was doing taxes. It wasn't the glamorous artist lifestyle that you might have in mind. But then turned it around. I hope I was all recovered by the following Saturday when I had the big Geelong Lucha Fantastica show, which was actually quite cool to go there. You guys may not know, but I actually grew up in rural Victoria, not far from Geelong, a little town called Little River, which is actually where the original few Mad Max films were filmed. Nice little bit of trivia there. So yeah, it was kind of cool being able to come and do my thing and sell my art in a place. You know, I actually went first little bit of high school in Geelong. But it was kind of weird though, because I don't know, it's like different vibes in terms of the audience in Geelong and the you know, people who are looking to buy the things than some of the other shows. Nonetheless, I think there were still some really cool people there, which is always a really, really cool thing. I feel like no matter what, you know, crowd there is, there's always going to be some amazing weirdos in the crowd, like-minded weirdos, I guess. I say that very affectionately. I consider myself a weirdo. Who will, you know, get to come, people will come over, we'll have a little chatsky, you know, these people seem to dig my art and dig whatever vibe it is that, you know, that they connect with on it, and then get to have some really, really nice chats. So it was a really great time, and now I'm sort of back in Brisbane, looking forward to what I have next coming up. So I have a little moment where I've got a couple of weeks now where I have to just make all of the art. So I think I mentioned last time, I've got my my next solo show coming up in the near future. I have to drop that off to the end of the month at the amazing Scratch Bar in beautiful Milton. The Scratch is my favorite bar of all time, and I feel privileged to be able to hang my art on their walls and for people to come in, and it's just such a great vibe. And basically it's the sequel to the last show, the Los Luchadores versus Cowboys de la Muerte. Doing the big old part dose to that, and so there's a little bit of pressure, you know, because I think that first show went really well, you know, I've been basically hawking the art from that show at like every one of these events. You know, you guys have probably seen a bunch of it online too, so I was really happy with how that all came together. So you know, it's my intention to you know, both live up to how well that went in terms of quality of work, and hopefully exceed it, you know, knock on wood, we'll see how we go. But that's the main thing that I'm working towards now. So it's sort of that time when you just get in that creative headspace, that creative zone. I don't know if it's like any other y'all out there that might fancy yourself as creatives or artists or anything like that. And sometimes you have time set aside where you're like, you know what? I'm going to do some painting. I'm going to do some drawing. I'm going to make some art. This is my time that I've set aside in my busy life to do it. And then, you know, you struggle. Sometimes that creative inspiration, it's not just like a tap that you can turn on and turn off kind of thing. It's like it's an organic thing. You need to be in the right headspace, all this kind of stuff. When you're trying to do that as a profession, I guess there's a bit more pressure that you have to be able to be like, all right motherfucker, we're gonna do this. So I don't know where I'm going with this. I guess, you know, inspiration can be a little bit tricky to try to, you know, conjure sometimes. But the best thing that I would recommend is try to just remove as much of the pressure as you can, and just let it come naturally, especially if you're not having to do this with a big-ass deadline for a solo show that you have coming up in the very near future. But, I mean, for me, as, like, a big old, like, ADD head kind of attention deficit disorder kind of guy, sometimes I do kind of honestly, the best inspiration that I can have to make stuff is the terrifyingness of an impending deadline. So for some of us that can be the greatest thing, to be like, all right, now or never, let's bloody do this. And then, you know, that's how you get into it. So I don't know, we all have our own ways, I guess, but fingers crossed that this goes well. Other than that, I got another makers market event, the handmade markets, I believe it's called, coming up at the Museum of Queensland and the Great Whale Hall on the 25th of May. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll get to hopefully meet a bunch of you all and have some fun chats then. And then I got a few other things that I've got kind of locked in for the following months. So yeah, I think we're keeping this in person Chris things alive. I'll get onto that events page on the website and keep you all updated. But yeah, fun things ahead. All right, let's throw over to our match of the week. Starting out with Jeremy coughing.
A little bit of cough. Oh, crack to get the beer for the working man.
All nothing but professionalism here. Folks, we're up to our latest match of the week here. We introduce a very professional gentleman known as James Vanderbeek, also known as my friend Jeremy. Welcome back to the show, bud.
Thanks, gang. I said I was ready, and then a little cough crept up and said, hey, no, sir, you're not quite as ready as you thought. And I figured we're off to a great start. We might as well crack the beer and get things off to a roll. Hey, Chris, thanks for having me.
Hey, bud. Yeah, always stoked to have you on the show, my friend. It's been a little minute.
Indeed. It's been wild. I want to give the faithful listeners some great news. My girlfriend and I got back together. Just kidding. We're still broken up. My heart is broken. Life sucks, and I can barely cling on to living. Just kidding. I'm making a lot of jokes there, but you know, my relationship is still in shambles. But that's fine. Things are looking better.
It sounds like they're definitely looking better, my friend. From the sounds of things, you've taken some big old steps there, and it seems like you're in a lot better place than you were a few weeks ago.
Yep. There's two philosophies that are at work here. One is, I'm working on myself. I'm going to go to therapy. Actually, my first therapy session is tomorrow morning, so doing the work, gang. And then also, I'm a firm believer in the fake it till you make it philosophy, so I'm living positive, feeling positive, and hopefully that'll have a positive output on my life.
I think so. I think there's something to that from experience. Like, if you sort of tell yourself, man, everything seems shit, but I got this. I can do this. I had a friend recently tell me every time she has something tough that she's doing, even if it's, you know, like a big run or something like that, her positive inner dialogue is, I can do hard things. And I love that so much. It's like, and we can, you know, you look back and you look at all of the tough things that you've made it through, and, you know, we can do hard things.
Hell yeah, I've certainly at my age have had my heart broken before. I'm usually on the heartbreak-y side of things because I tend to ride things out even if I know maybe they're not working as well as they should. But that's just me. Maybe it's not the best trait, but it's me.
Yeah, I've done that many times as well, my friend.
Hey. But yeah, I really, after a while, I sat down and kind of thought about it. Like, sure, my relationship is over. I no longer have a home that I'm living in with a person and that we call a home. It's now a house that I'm staying in for a moment, but it was a home for a while there, and it is no longer. And you know, just facing that reality. But I thought about it, like, Chris, for one, I'm not in debt.
That's a good thing.
I have a good credit score. So in America, that's a very important thing. You have to have that high quality credit score so anyone will look at you. My 401k is looking great. Nice. I am a tall man. I am handsome. I am charming. So I have a lot of things going for me outside of not having a girlfriend.
Exactly.
And honestly, having a girlfriend is a hindrance on trying to meet other women. So
it's generally frowned upon unless you have other agreements in place.
And what's funny is, yeah, that's very true. I, since my relationship ended, I've found out that more than one girl in this entire time had been attracted to me, but had never said anything because I was in a relationship. And it made me reflect on the fact that women are way more respectful in that situation. Like, if a guy knows a girl is in a situation, like a relationship, and he is into her, he won't hesitate to tell her. Whereas a girl, typically, they're not looking to break up a relationship. I got to respect women for that.
big respect there, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, you're definitely a catch, dude.
Thanks, bro. I'm not, like, not trying to toot my own horn, but I was really in the dumps, and I, like, probably overly so. And so, yeah, I'm no loser. I'm no slouch, man. I'm living my dreams, like, locally. I'm in wrestling. I'm an artist. I don't have a girlfriend. That's the only thing that's against me, and that's not a problem for some women.
I think you're in a really good spot, my brother. And then I think, like, you know, for all the listeners out there too, this is probably something very relatable, you know, something we all go through, and whether it's like this or other things that are bumming you out. But I think that sort of, like, positive dialogue that you're talking about, it's kind of, you know, reminding yourself about the good things that you have in life, that where, you know, you might have a bit of a, you know, things are a bit sunnier and brighter in some ways than we might think about sometimes. So it can be good to kind of remind ourselves of that kind of stuff every now and then.
You got to reflect, man. Like, I've got my friend in Australia that he thinks I'm rad enough to get on his show every once in a while. So, like,
who's this?
Man.
You've got another friend in Australia?
Oh, yeah, his name is also Chris, strangely enough. No, yes, you, sir.
Oh,
but anyway.
Thank you, my friend.
Honestly, just trying to, you know, have fun. Like I said, therapy tomorrow. I'm going to a concert tomorrow by myself. I've never really done that before, so trying to get out of my comfort zone. Seeing this band called Tiger Cub, who are fucking sick.
Nice.
But yeah, man. Yeah.
Dude, I'm honestly so happy to hear about the therapy side of things as well. And, you know, I think it's important to talk about this kind of stuff, you know, amongst buds, amongst bros, like, that the kind of, like, toxic shit of just, you know, keeping that kind of thing to yourself is so bullshit, you know. So, and I've always been sort of a big believer in the power of, you know, putting the work in for mental health kind of stuff. So that sounds really good, dude.
Yeah, and I've never been, like, one that's been particularly afraid of being honest about my emotions. I think I have a high EQ level as far as, I forget what that stands for, emotional intelligence. No, what's the emotional intelligence? I think EQ, whatever. Yeah. I don't have word intelligence, but I have emotional intelligence.
Acronyms are hard.
Yeah, yeah, it's ridiculous. And I think it is EQ, because that doesn't make any sense, but whatever.
EQ, isn't that like an audio thing?
I'm just kidding.
Thing?
Yes. But,
someone yeah, I know knows pretty, what we're talking about.
I'm pretty checked in with that, as far as that is concerned. So hopefully I can get some real coping skills from an expert.
Oh, for sure, dude. I think it's a really good thing. You know, I you know, myself, I've had different you know, therapy stuff in the past where that really helped me through, you know, the tough times that you're kind of, like, going through. You know, talking about it to a professional. I mean, I think talking about it to buds is really important too.
Sure. Oh,
but sometimes,
definitely.
Like, it's just tough, like, to know, you know, it's not like you're able to give professional kind of, like, advice and you know, have studied this for most of your lifetime. So I think that hand in hand with the professional stuff is a really good idea.
Yeah, plus it, if you choose the same outlet that's not a professional, eventually your problems inadvertently start becoming their problems, and they, as much as they want to be there for you, it's hard to have the right answers constantly, and if you're not an expert. So hopefully my therapist is cool. I chose to get a female therapist because I thought this might be something I need to deal with in therapy. I felt like I could open up more to a woman because I'm, you know, raised by a single mother, so that kind of is easy for me to connect to. And honestly, I think one of the things I need to talk to the therapy about is how much my own value, my personal value, is tied up in how the women in my life view me. Because, dude, I was super mopey until I got on some dating apps and started talking to all these girls, and then I felt better. Yeah. And then I started talking to girls who I actually feel a connection to, and that even makes you feeling better. You, like, can actually open up about the real dude I am, and not just some guy who's, like, What up, girl?
I mean, it's definitely like a confidence boost, right? To kind of get back out there and at least start talking and, you know, seeing that there is a whole world out there of, you know, cool ladies who think that you're actually pretty darn cool yourself, you know?
And there's some girls out there who actually like wrestling, which is a shocker, so...
Wild.
Yeah. I saw a girl on a dating site. I was like, hey, wait a minute, that's you with Pentagon and Phoenix. I know those motherfuckers.
Lucha Bros gal right there.
Indeed, get one
with a mask collection. That'd be something.
I believe she does have one.
Oh, wow, dude. All right, well, see how this goes. Keep us posted.
No, I think she said something about she used to have a picture of herself with a wrestling mask on one of her pages, and guys kept on asking about fucking with it on. Because, you know, that's us. Like, my first thought was went to fucking about with the mask on or fucking with the mask on, but I knew I was smart enough not to actually say that out loud.
All men.
Oh, yeah. I'm a nice guy, and I don't want anyone to get the wrong impression. I am not a man whore by any means. I'm just saying hello to a couple nice young ladies on some dating apps. No big deal.
I think that is a very good thing. Yeah. Well, keep us posted, dude. But I think you're making some real good steps, and that's funny you say about the gone or gig thing by yourself. That was a big step for me a little while back of getting comfortable to do that kind of stuff just on your own and sort of like reclaim your independence kind of thing.
I never have, man. I never have. Another issue probably I should talk to is I've been a serial relationship guy. Like, literally, as soon as I break up, a couple months later, I find another chick to date and end up being with them for years. So, yeah.
can relate on that front as well, my friend.
And I'm not saying it's a problem by any means. Every girl that I've ended up getting with in a long-term relationship with, I've deeply cared about and loved. It just happens to be the case that I'm not single very long. I don't do it very well. I'm not, I can't just go out and start swanging this dick around. I'm like, oh, I meet a girl who thinks I'm cool and she wants to touch my penis. Like, why wouldn't I want to keep her around? You know what I mean?
Love it. Love it. Hey, maybe that's just a testament that you're a very eligible bachelor. You know, you don't stay single long.
Yeah. There you go, pal. Watch out, world. This hot commodity is getting picked up soon.
Certainly. Oh, man. So on from that to some wrestling here. I don't really have a good segue. I was trying to think of Big Boss Dan's eligible bachelor.
You want to think of actually abrupt segues are perfect because this match began abruptly. We started out. Dr. Death already had Kawada in a side headlock. What happened here, Chris?
He did. This was joined in progress, which the old JIP was something that I always saw.
Were they notorious for that?
Oh, I mean, yeah. I mean, they're basically trying to make these matches fit on an hour-long TV show, I think, for most part in Japan at the time. But it was something I was always annoyed at, you know, when you're going through match listings, especially in watching a lot of Japanese stuff from, you know, tapes back in the day. You'd be looking at match listings on people's Angel Fire websites and such. But, yeah, you'd see these match listings in there that are in brackets, JIP, and you'd be like, oh, man, that's so annoying. I wish I could see the full match. But sometimes, a match like this, they cut out, I mean, I really would love to see the full version, but I don't think it's available anywhere. But I feel like this was still quite perfect for what we got. I think they only cut out like 5 minutes from the start. Probably some chain stuff or I don't know.
I was going to assume it was like just nothing. They cut out 20 seconds and Dr. Death just got caught up real quick because Kawada's so good, man.
Oh, everyone was so good in this. So for everyone playing at home, official introduction here.
Give him the card, man. I apologize. What is the match listing?
This is about from the 1993 All Japan Real World Tag League. This is getting towards the pointy end of the tournament here, and also towards the pointy end of Big Bubba or Big Boss Man's foray in Japan at this point. Basically, what got me whole ass into watching this match was I was so intrigued of this, like, So in the early 90s, Big Boss Man, between being in WWF and WCW, actually had a great little six-month run in All Japan. That sounds delightful. So I looked into it. I watched a few different matches of this run. The early ones, it's similar to some of the other stuff we've watched in the past. You know, we still got that real kind of like WWF kind of style about what he's doing. He's still kind of adjusting back into the you know, All Japan approach to wrestling. But this point, really, right, you know, towards the tail end of this All Japan run, I think he has adjusted perfectly, and I'm sad we didn't get Boss Man in Japan for a heck of a lot longer, because this was just delightful. So Boss Man teaming with Dr. Death, Steve Williams, for this tag tournament, and they are against, I would say, one of the greatest tag teams in all of professional wrestling of this era, and honestly, of all time, in the form of the Holy Demon Army of Toshiaki Kawada and Akira Taue. This one takes place at the Aichi Prefectural Gymnasium in Nagoya. I've actually been to that building a few times to see some wrestling back in the day myself.
You don't say.
Beautiful, beautiful venue. I saw some Dragon Gate and some New Japan there, I believe. But
running on the same day or different days, different trips?
Different days, possibly different trips. It all blends together a little bit. It was I remember I got to see the big Dragon Gate one, was their Dead or Alive show, where they have a big old crazy cage match where it's a multi-man affair, goes for like 45 minutes, and the last guy in the cage gets either his mask removed or his head shaved. But that is a tale for a different time.
Well, at this time in my life, since we talked so much about me earlier, I'll keep this bit up. I was 13 years old, and I think I just had very recently touched my first boob.
Oh, man, in 1993.
Hell yeah, dog.
Damn, well done. Got some Jeremy getting some titty.
Bear titty, dude.
Bear titties.
No, they're human titties. They're a bear.
Right. Oh, I see. They're not furry bear titties.
They might have been furry. I don't know.
It could have been a bear of the other variety, you know, who also has some hairy titties.
What are you trying to imply here, friend?
I am single now.
You never know how things could go, buddy. Maybe it's 2024. Things are a lot more fluid these days.
You could try out the world of bears. Maybe it'll work for you. Who knows?
I'm not hairy enough, friends. They wouldn't have me.
But you don't necessarily have to be. I don't know. I'm not an expert in the bear culture here.
This podcast is going to get silly, I have a feeling. All right, let's continue.
Oh my gosh. Oh, but yeah, I was so transfixed by just the idea of Big Boss Man, Big Bubba, in Japan for some reason. I don't know why. But yeah, I watched a whole bunch of his stuff. He had a real fun tag against Misawa and Kobashi earlier on in his run. And I was looking at, this is what Cage Match is fantastic for. Just going down these weird rabbit holes of, like, you know, what was Big Boss Man doing in 1993? And I came across an interesting stat. Did you know the last match, I believe, of Big Boss Man's life was also in Japan?
What? That's crazy.
Yeah.
The whole time I was wondering is, how come Vince didn't send a cease and desist to get him out of this gear?
Well, apparently it was like under the radar in Japan, but then he goes back to WCW as the boss, and they very quickly did get that cease and desist, and then we got that great Guardian Angel run, if you recall.
Ah, I loved that bit. Ironically, like, I didn't think it was cool by any means. I was just like, holy shit, Boss Man is stealing some New York vigilante police gimmick. Like, I had to, like, find out what the hell this thing was, because at first I'm like, huh? And yeah, and then you have to, like, research, like, okay, he's adopting this thing. Unusual. But, dude, I've always thought Boss Man was especially agile for a big guy. But
oh my gosh.
In this match, he's like throwing so many kicks that he doesn't in regular American wrestling. He don't kick that much. And he's just kicking the shit out of guys over here.
And he had such good kicks and stomps too. Like, I think a big part of it that, you know, just you see this workhorse, big man, just moving across the ring like nobody's business.
Just gliding.
Oh, and the his just weird body type of being so tall but so big and having such long legs. Like, it's yeah, so
His legs are long and skinny, and he's got a big upper body. I am similarly shaped to the boss man.
Man, well, you may have a great wrestling career and a greater selling ability. 44,
friend. My days are done from the ring.
I think DDP would tell you otherwise.
You say I'm going to be WCW champion, Chris? Holy shit!
Why not? Why not?
But yeah, dude, I was blown away.
That company went out of business 24 years ago.
Well, they're going to bring it back for me, baby.
Absolutely. Why not?
Honestly, if I was a wrestler, that's the only championship I'd want to hold.
The old David Arquette belt there.
Hell yeah, Dave. Dave's my buddy. But no, back to Bossman. He, tremendous. I always love the fucking spot where he slides out toward the corner and then comes back in and just fucks a guy up. And in this match, he kind of did a little bit of a version of that, where he slid out and grabbed Kawada by the legs and then kind of flipped him around to, you know, bring him crotch first against the ring post. So that was pretty interesting. He kind of, you know, things we're traditionally used to of him and changing around for these Japanese matches.
Oh, yeah. Everyone that I watched as well of this Bossman run in Japan, he always did that big old splash, which in every one of the matches except this, he missed it spectacularly. It was always like a big like pop because he missed this like massive splash. This one, he finally hits it, only for it to be a two, but it gets one of the best crowd reactions because I guess they've been seeing it as well, and they're like,
they've
he
been
finally
conditioned.
Did it.
That's the best thing about wrestling. You like over time can condition people into saying, hey, he has not gotten that move. So when he finally does, huge reaction. I love that. What's just that is the story of a match itself. The guy's like trying to hit a body slam or something, and he finally gets it. And even though it's a body slam, the crowd goes fucking bananas.
I adore that shit. Old school wrestling psychology, my friend.
Hell yeah, baby.
Just make the fans believe in something. Doesn't matter how dumb or preposterous or whatever it is. But if you sow those seeds,
he just
seeds,
can't get this body slam. What is going on here?
Yep. All about it. But I was interested as well in this one. I was like, man, Bossman and Dr. Death have such great chemistry in this. Like, obviously, they've had the better part of a tag league to kind of, like, find their chemistry. So that sort of made sense. But I was like, rewatching it today, I was like, that chemistry is just so damn good, though. And then I realized, oh, shit, before Bossman ever went to WWF, him and Williams were two of the main eventers for UWF or Mid-South, Watts' territory. So they were working against one another, probably doing all sorts of stuff together. So it makes sense.
Oh, yeah. Did they adopt any sweet tag team name like Death Justice or anything of that nature?
Oh, they should have. I mean, this is when he was just Big Bubba Rogers. He hadn't got to his... I still don't know.
I meant here in the tag league.
Like, oh, right. That would
yeah, you know,
sense.
They always have the great wrestling tag team names of these guys in like Jurassic Powers or Miracle Violence Connection. These characters are Big Bad Dangerous with our Bam Bam and our Vaders. But these two characters need a tag name, and I think Death Justice would be just the perfect fit.
I feel like if Bubba had to come back for another tour after this one and they would have been teaming together, that's when they would have got that name.
All right.
But Death Justice, heck of a name.
Fuck yeah, but that's our tag team name. You know what, Chris? Rename the podcast.
Death Justice.
It's an art podcast about wrestling called Death Justice. Like, you know, I don't get it, but I love it.
We've pivoted over to doing a very in-depth analysis of upcoming what's that thing? Executions you guys do over
you guys.
You guys seem to love your executions. I hate them, dude.
I'm against the death penalty. To be clear, on this podcast right here, Jeremy Tate is anti-death penalty.
You and me both, my friend. I'll put my name on that one.
Yes. Oh man. We're all over the place. This match, when it started out, I just want to talk about Dr. Death and his no-selling Raiden Kawada's face. Like, just the angriest fucking big burly American guy just screaming at Kawada as Kawada's trying to get his shit in. I just love it. But then Kawada caught him with a spin kick, and Dr. Death definitely sold the shit out of that.
I love that it's like he's not going to sell this straight away, but you're going to have to work for this motherfucker. And then finally he just catches him with that kick, and it's like, all right.
He sells it like fucking death.
Yeah. That to me is wrestling, and all these motherfuckers out there that complain about no selling or whatever. It's like, as long as there is a sell, you know, in place, doesn't have to be right away, but the whole deal of like no selling is something so that then you can make more of when you finally do sell it. Which,
hell yeah. Also, the concept of no selling is not unusual. Like, in a fight, there are motherfuckers who get punched in the face and it hurts like fucking hell, but they pretend like it doesn't because they want the other guy to think, holy shit, this motherfucker just took my best and he's still standing.
Oh man, speaking of no selling, I got a little tangent story here that I think you're gonna like. You know how I've been doing these Lucha Fantastica shows where I've been selling my art at these Mexican wrestling shows? Been so much fun, I've loved it. I just got back from Melbourne from doing a swing down there for Melbourne and a show in a place called Geelong, which is actually not far from where I grew up. But on this Geelong show, Geelong is kind of like a little bit of a country town, I guess. Built up country town, but it's definitely different kind of folk, if you follow me. And there were various points in this show where they've got a lot of crowd interaction kind of thing, where they, you know, at certain points have some of the fans get in the ring. Like, there was one who was celebrating a Bucks party. Apparently he decided that this was his moment to shine, his moment in the sun. He was in the ring, and I think my buddy who was working the show had challenged him to a dance off. You know, just being smart, being like, all right, this will be a way to incorporate the dude. So Matt did his little dance, and then it was this guy's turn. He turned around to Matt's tag partner and gave him a shoot rock bottom.
Wait a minute. The guy took him off his feet without any assistance?
The dude that took it just looked so confused. He just kind of got like pushed over almost like a halfway point between a rock bottom and like a bad STO.
Yeah, I was about to say STO.
Man, it was hilarious. And then there was a point, if that wasn't
knocked the wind out of it or anything?
I think, yeah, the dude, like, they got him out of the ring pretty fast before the workers could put the boots to him.
That's hilarious. What a fucking maniac.
But he's then, I see him go over to his other mates from the Bucks party. He's doing high fives. He's so proud of himself with his bloody rock bottom. Another point later in the show, there was another dude where apparently there's a bit of the show where they get everyone in the ring for their birthday and they do birthday tequila shots out of the host's belly button.
Wait, is this a man or a woman, the host in this thing?
So there's the host dude, Señor Fantastico. He's the gentleman who runs the whole kit and caboodle. But then there's another dude.
Seems like a self-adopted nickname.
That I'm forgetting this other guy's name, but he is the life of the show. He's the one who gives everyone their tequila shots through the evening when they yell his name loud enough. But so everyone does the tequila shots out of this guy's belly button. Most of the time it's like a bunch of, you know, different ladies from the crowd who are just saying it's their birthday. It's not their actual birthday, but that's okay. It's all a tequila party around here. And then there was this other dude who was there who took that moment to do the tequila shot, and then he like tried to like roll up, pin the dude who was...
What the fuck is going on here?
The people of Geelong, dude. What the fuck? And then, but the great thing was the worker, a bit of a girthy gentleman, without a second, well, he's not going to be putting over this motherfucker from the crowd. He gets him in a head scissors immediately and then rotates over and sits on the dude's face until they get him out of the ring. It was tremendous.
That's awesome. Like, yeah, you're not going to make me look like a fool here, buddy. I'm getting my comeuppance.
Yep.
Classic wrestling, Chris.
Oh my gosh. But memorable moments. Memorable moments, guys.
We're all builders. The question is, what are we building? At Ferguson, we work with people transforming the world we live in. We have the products and tools they need to help them move faster. We bring our partners the knowledge, experience, and scale to make complex projects simple, successful, and sustainable. Ferguson helps build the things that make things better. Ferguson. Together, we build better.
That's beautiful.
back to the match.
Yes, yes. One thing I want to say is back in the day when I first got onto the Twitter machine and was, you know, interacting with professional wrestlers and doing occasional art pieces, one time, Chris Hero asked me to do a Mount Rushmore of Japanese wrestlers, and he included Tawe, who I was a name I wasn't too familiar with, but he put him over really big, and I want to say, like, rightfully so. I haven't seen much of his work. This match was great. This guy is deceptively tall. Like,
he's a big boy.
But he doesn't look it. Like, if he's just sitting by standing by himself, not compared next to another person, the way his mass is like proportioned on his body, he doesn't look like large, but he is a big, big boy, and driving these left arm lariats through motherfuckers. Fucking A, that guy's a beast.
Oh, I've always been such a fan of Tawe, dude. I guess he's a unique kind of like physique, almost like a little bit approaching like your giant barbar kind of thing, but not quite bizarre proportions as
yeah, barbar. Yeah, he's not disproportionate by any means, no.
But he's definitely a very tall and lanky gentleman, but he's incredible. I originally read a bit about Tawe. I think I probably got into All Japan through Wrestling Observer a lot, and Dave always just had the nastiest things to say about Tawe. Basically, the thing of, like, he's the worst of the pillars, should never be considered a pillar. He'd hear from all of the guys, you know, the gaijins that come back who say that, you know, oh, the other guys are great, but Tawe's not very good. Or just this Tawe slander that I hope that Dave has since reformed his opinions. Because Tawe is incredible. There should not be anyone doubting the greatness of Akira Tawe. His amazing choke slam thing that we'll talk about a little bit later. And then his tag team and chemistry with Kawada was just out of this world. So big sure. time fan of Tawe here, and I'm honestly just like overjoyed when I get to, you know, see others kind of be like, man, didn't know much about this guy, but he's awesome.
I have appreciation. I should have known, of course, when Chris put him over, but it's not like I'm going to jump to the tapes, man, see what Chris is talking about. The other Chris, not this one. This match, the story became pretty clear at the gate where these motherfuckers knew that they had to cut off the kicking expertise of Kawada as best as they can. So, yeah, that was pretty clear out the gate here.
It was a smart game plan, really. You got Kawada, he's going to kick you real hard. You're probably someone like Big Bubba who's been in WWF for ages. Be like, why is this motherfucker kicking me so hard? I'm not used to this.
I really liked how they were trying to double team him at one point to stop him from kicking, and the way he escaped is by kicking them.
So good.
Cracked me the fuck up.
I think that's also a thing of like the moment that I chose for the illustration in question was that big great enziguri that he kicks. I think this is his big comeback from them working over his leg for him to get the hot tag to Tawe. And it's just an amazing moment, and he like catches him after, again, they work over his legs. What else are you gonna make your comeback with? The kicks that they're trying to prevent. The other thing that was great about this,
most people would sell their legs and stuff and say, nah, I can't kick right now. But he's like, your shit is not doing any good, guys. I'm going to kick.
The only way to come back from someone working over your strongest weapon is to double down.
Love it.
But yeah, the other good thing about this, other than it being just such a great thing of like working over his legs and he comes back with a kick, is the fact that I think Bubba's stumble selling is my favorite thing that he does. His big man, you know, the whole like chopping down the giant redwood kind of thing, and the way he's like stumbling like back and forth.
It's near drunken master selling when he's stumbling around.
Incredible. And yeah, when Kawada hits this big enziguri, there's a bit later in the match where he hits an incredible Garmangiri as well, where Bubba just does the greatest stumble selling you ever seen.
Staggering all over the place. Yeah. Oh,
amazing. And that's what I tried to capture in the illustration as well. Just Bubba's kind of like discombobulation, you know.
One of my favorite bits is the first time up early in the match when Bubba starts throwing his uppercuts, but he catches Tawe so fucking clean.
Oh.
It made a noise that I don't know if they were doing thigh slaps at the time, but it sounded like he really just made his jaw. You know when your jaw, your upper jaw and your lower jaw come together really quick and they make almost a clapping noise?
Mm.
It sounded like that.
Incredible. And that the best part about that was, I think that was after, you know, Tawe was the House of Fire coming in after Kawada's been worked over. And he's just like working over both of them at the same time, turning to Williams, turning to Bubba, just like boom, boom, boom. His awesome like palm strikes and shit. And then he turns back to Bubba. And Bubba just catches him with the most clean, like perfectly timed uppercut that you ever did see. And man, can we just talk about how great Bubba's like uppercuts and strikes and punches are through this whole
thing? Dude, I've mentioned that multiple times. Like it's almost like he spams uppercuts, but it's fine because they all look so awesome. They're so clean, and very few people work a uppercut like Bossman. Yeah. I hate to put him over for a moment, but I think Kane throws a pretty sweet uppercut. Glenn Jacobs, you know, gotta admit it. I hate to say it, but it's true. Bossman, his reminds me of Kane's. Like, just it's like short and abrupt, but looks fucking awesome. And sometimes almost looks like it's an open palm strike to the throat. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, I always think of Kane's one because of Festus or Gallows or whatever you want to call it.
Oh, when he was faking? Starting,
that ended up becoming one of the key parts of his repertoire of his entire career just because of that brief run where he was fake Kane.
I totally forgot about that. But yeah, Luke Gallows still to this day does the Kane uppercut.
I mean, if you practice it that much and you want to get it down, shit. It's like,
it looks good, man. I as much as I hate Glenn Jacobs, you gotta admit the guy could fucking work his ass off for a big man fucking bastard.
I'm not gonna be that enthusiastic about my compliments for Kane. I will for Big Boss Man. Oh, let me tell you that.
All right.
But the other good thing about his punches through this whole thing is in Japan, smartly, you know, that the punch is still an illegal move. A closed fist punch is still illegal. So one of the great things about all of these punches that the boss man hits and uppercuts and shit, they get so much heat every time. There's not like a single time he hits one of these punches where there isn't this roaring boo reaction. And I really think the crowd made this match so great. Like the crowd heat through this whole thing was just tremendous.
Agreed. And the attacking the leg really worked out because there was a bit where Kawada was fighting out from both these motherfuckers kicking his ass, and he gets a belly to back suplex, and then he didn't do the traditional Kawada, you know, I'm going to fire up and get out of this cell. He just immediately buckled it. His leg was fucked up and he could not progress any further. Is Kawada the guy who's most known for that whole, the no sell and then suddenly sell your ass off, you know, sell where, Magical. I love that bit. It's so good.
I'd say
like, I'm firing up. You know, when I'm pretty.
one of the greatest sellers of all time is Kawada. And again, it's ironic because a lot of people are like, oh, that no-selling motherfucker. It's like, no, it's like he'll wait for his moment to really get the most out of that, you know, that delayed sell. And he did it so great through his whole career and in this match.
Yep, love me some Kawada. He was one of those Japanese wrestlers that almost like was one of the first to transcend, and people who were American wrestling fans just knew of him because how badass he was without even necessarily seeing any matches. The black and yellow gear and all the kicks, it really like kind of sets him apart from the other guys, you know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. And I think also from a lot of the stuff that, you know, we probably, you know, grew up on in the early 2000s in terms of like indie wrestling and the height of ROH and all that kind of stuff. So much of it was influenced by guys like Kawada, like the amount of, you know, Kawada kicks that we would see from like Loki and shit, and the like just so many Kawada tributes throughout all of indie wrestling, I think. And, you know, you mentioned Hiro and the Stretch Plum, of course.
Yep. Transcendent. Some guys just are, they just without, because Kawada doesn't have like the most, he's not the most charismatic guy as far as outward emotion, but he has that silent charisma that just makes him cool as fuck.
Yeah. I think a lot of the old Japan guys, I'm gonna hit the stab real quick, Chris. Yeah, you go for it. I think a lot of the old Japan dudes from this era, that was what they were known for, was the, not this over-the-top, showy kind of, like, bullshit charisma, but, like, they're the strong, silent type. You know, your dudes like Misawa, Kawada, Inatawe especially, like, they're just about firing up when they need to, but until they get to that point, they're not having to be the most rah-rah, let's go, you know, doing crowd cheers and taunts and such. They're just about, you know, being a dude.
Yeah, man, and then you see Kawada as he looks as an older guy, and he looks like a driving instructor, and he just looks like just the chillest guy. I was like, that guy used to be the most badass motherfucker in the world, and he's just like living his best life now. He doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, running his ramen restaurant. Still refusing to ever smile. Big fan.
I would love to go get Kawada ramen.
Oh, I told you how I got my parents to, didn't I?
No, what?
Yeah, when they were in Japan.
You sent them to Kawada's restaurant?
Yeah, it's like a birthday present for me. I was like, I don't want anything but a photo of you guys with Kawada. That's what I want for my birthday.
Wait, that too? Oh my god, that's amazing, Chris.
Yeah, and the best part was like, they obviously...
Did he smile?
No. They had no idea who this guy was, but they were like, he was kind of a dick. And I was like, yeah, that's great. And you should see this photo of Mum and Dad and Kawada. They're just standing there smiling, and like Kawada's just stone-faced. It's incredible.
Chris, if you don't send me this photo, I will never be friends with you again.
All right, I'm going to find this photo.
Holy shit, that sounds amazing. Two Australian older people hanging out with Japanese restaurant owner / professional wrestler. They have no idea because they were sent by their maniac son. That's so amazing.
Oh man, the bad part of it though is like, so it was real hard to find. Again, I don't think my parents are that great at like following Google Maps instructions, so I question exactly how hard it was to find, but apparently quite hard to find. And it's down this the stairs to get there. My mum slipped on the stairs, fucked up her ankle, so like before even making it into the restaurant, this potentially screwed up her ankle for a good part of the following.
Your mom
the
seriously
trip.
Injured herself for a bit,
right? And here I am. I'm the one who created this. What a piece of shit over here.
Oh my god. Oh, I'm so glad we got to this story. That is amazing.
Yeah, it's I still love that photo. I still haven't framed it yet, but I definitely am. That's my plan.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, dude. Hey, and also we talked about that Bam Bam design. I'm definitely gonna buy it. I just have to until I get a new home, I really can't afford any expenditures. I'm going to get a tattoo, and that's the last thing I'm spending money on, because you know how it feels to have a tattoo after a big life change. It kind of, you know, is very cathartic. So that's my plan.
It is indeed. Yeah, that sounds good, man. No rush, no rush.
You've always, all right, pal. Always I just didn't want to bullshit you.
Oh, no stress, dude. They're there waiting here whenever you are ready.
Nice.
Yeah, but, man, the other thing about this... So we've raved about Tawang. We've raved about Kawada. Raved about Boss Man. The other dude who was fucking incredible in this match is Dr. Steve Williams. We get, like, basically a full showcase of exactly what I think made old Doc so incredible. We got to see the Doctor Bomb. He's just awesome suplexes all over the place.
We got to see this motherfucker do a round off. The guy was doing fucking gymnastics type shit, you know, the cartwheel, but a half cartwheel round off into a fucking splash into the corner. This motherfucker doing short leg drop kicks to people's knees while they're standing up with precision. The guy's a fucking beast.
Doc is so great.
The Oklahoma Stampede, Chris, come on.
Oh, and we got to see the twice because the first one was cut off. In, like, the greatest way possible, where Kawada just comes and kicks him in the back of the knee. Which, like, so perfect. There's so much to love about this match, dude. And that one, the cartwheel thing into the corner, that's the first time I've ever seen him. He catches him with his, like, a big backsplash kind of thing. And then goes on to do, like, a sweet... suplex out of the corner, kind of like
that was a gnarly ass suplex,
like
too.
Scotty Steiner's kind of one. Man, so much good stuff.
I don't know if I had ever seen that the round off handspring thing him before. Honestly, I've seen a lot of Dr. Death matches because I love WCW and earlier WWF, but I don't know about that.
This was, I reckon, the prime of this dude's career, like, because he did some awesome stuff in Mid South. A lot of awesome stuff in Japan in the 80s, but to me, this
and a man,
like,
who's so badass that it required a more famous Steve Williams to change his wrestling name.
Yeah,
isn't that crazy? It's like Steve Williams is so awesome that an actual Steve Williams could not be Steve Williams because Steve Williams was already so too fucking badass. That's crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, rightfully so. You're not coming out here bloody being Stone Cold Steve Williams. That'd be ridiculous.
Insanity, man. I mean, it's Steve Williams' respect to Steve Williams that he refused to be Steve Williams.
Yeah, I mean, both big-time Texas college athletes as well, right?
Yep.
So,
tremendous.
Yeah, I definitely want to get to the one era of Doc that I haven't watched as heavily as some of the others is properly watching that those last
Brawl
years.
For All?
Oh, no, I was going to go a bit before that.
That's good.
That'd probably be a bit depressing. But the tail end of that Mid-South run when it became UWF, and I've seen some of the rad matches of, like, him and Gordy against one another, but I definitely would love to watch that magic happen on a week-by-week basis. So at some
point
honestly, in the future.
And honestly, one of the better wrestling nicknames of all time. Come on. Dr. Death? What are we talking about here?
That's up there with, like, the Bruiser and the Crusher.
One of my first wrestling t-shirt designs is actually a Dr. Death design for a company called Bum Trunk that was owned by the Sheik, you know, the one who was in the tag team with Joseph Fatu.
Oh, the MLW Sheik, yes.
Yeah, that character. Yep. One of the first designs I ever did was for Dr. Death. He's always been near to dear to my heart. And it's awesome to see him being, you know, running on full cylinders. Because, you know, when he got to WWE, he was still awesome. But they kind of embarrassed him and kind of made him look like a goof with the Brawl for All shit and fucked him all up. So it's good to see him in his prime, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I think the first Doc I ever saw was probably when he, after that WWF and WCW run, the Oklahoma shit that we, gosh, I wish that didn't happen.
Shout out to Eddie Bear Ferrara.
Gosh. And then he had a comeback to Old Japan in the early 2000s. And he still had flashes of being great, but he was clearly, you know, his best was behind him. So after, I was like, oh yeah, this guy seems like he was pretty cool at one point. Then you finally get to see like this shit where it's like, oh, okay. So it's interesting with those kind of guys where it's like different people see them at different stages of their career. And I think it really sucks, you know, especially for Doc, that I just think there's so many American fans. The only Doc they've probably ever seen was from that late 90s WWF and WCW run. And it just sucks so bad.
Especially the WCW stuff when he's paired with Oklahoma for a minute. And then fucking Oklahoma. Oh, wait. Fucking Dr. Death got to beat the shit out of Ed in WWF, right? Wasn't that what happened? Like, the outcome of all of that shit is they bring Ed Ferrara out and let Dr. Death beat the tar out of him.
I think they had some sort of match, right? And it was like him getting revenge for JR or something. But
so ridiculous.
The one great I like part Ed. About that was apparently. Do you remember the bit where Doc they had him beat the shit out of one of the misfits?
Oh, Jerry Only, wasn't he?
Yeah,
he's the one who was wrestling. Yeah. Hell yeah. That was fucking wild, yeah.
So WCW much respect was to Jerry Only for that, right?
WCW was on one, man. A lot of people really hate on all of the shit, but I loved every single moment. The terrible, the amazing. Like, it was just crash TV inadvertently. I love that shit.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to love about the worst of WCW. But again, that's another thing for another time. But
Hang on. We were talking about Dr. Death and things he did in this match. And one thing I wanted to mention was at one point he had Kawada on the outside and he was trying to drop him leg first, you know, because they're working on the leg, on the top of the guardrail. And like, Kawada inadvertently kind of like popped off of it and like just landed on the floor, and he kept selling like he actually fell on it, right? But it's just funny when even tremendous, amazing wrestlers try to do some things and sometimes they just don't work out.
Oh yeah, I think the greatest sign of a great worker is when shit doesn't go quite, you know, as you had originally planned it. You just keep going without a blip and you just like march on forward. Don't, you know, stop the whole match to a grinding halt.
Most people don't notice. Exactly. Most people don't notice.
It's like a split second blip, and then you're like, keep going. That is the true greats, I reckon.
Hell yeah. Agreed.
Yeah, but this, I thought, like, it got to a certain point of this match where it was, like, so good, and there was, like, all of the pinfall breakups, and the crowd was just roaring, dude. Got to that stage where they were, like, doing the stomp your feet kind of, like, thing, where there's just this, like, roar of sound. And I think that's the real bit of what sort of defines the magic that is this, like, you know, holy era of 90s old Japan. It's just like how great the crowd reactions were, because how much they bloody love these dudes, you know. Same with like the Von Erichs in Texas. Like, they love these dudes so much, where they're finally like getting their shit off and like making their comeback on these gaijins that have been working over Kawada's leg. Like, these reactions are insane. Every near fall pop was insane. Like, and then when they finally got down that finishing stretch, I just thought from like start to finish, this was like a textbook lesson on how you build a match to like a proper top tippy top crescendo, and then like finish it right at the perfect moment.
Yeah, nice slow boil throughout the entire thing. The crowd, when the Japanese crowd gets that raucous, dude, it's, you have to appreciate even more, because you know they're, because they're kind of reserved, they don't want to necessarily get that out of control. Like, they want to hold that back, and they just, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, is the real proper term. Like, they just unload and just let loose, and just every single near fall, all the big fucking signature moves, they just pop so big, and it almost feels like they can't even control it. It just comes over them.
It's like, that's the magic of pro wrestling, right? Like, they're just creating this reaction in someone, and they're like, that's working a crowd, like working people to a point where it's like, I was not planning on yelling like a maniac during this professional wrestling bout, but here we are.
Yeah, for sure. What do you call that powerbomb that Kawada does, where it's like a short stack? Does it have a different name than just a powerbomb?
I always just called it like a Kawada powerbomb, you know, because there's the Gonzo bomb, but that's like more.
No, that's like straight back on the back of the neck.
They
don't land on their back at all.
I just always saw this as just like a, you know, classic Kawada powerbomb.
Yeah, it's a beauty.
That's how I tried to do it back in my wrestling days.
And then Dr. Death with his sit-out powerbomb, like almost like a Liger bomb kind of, but yeah.
Oh, that Dr. Bomb was so sick, man.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing, after watching a lot of Doc, you don't see him break out that Dr. Bomb all the time, but we got it all in this match.
Oh, yeah, buddy. Let me see if there's anything else notable that I mentioned here. Give me a moment. Yeah, I just have a lot of section how I'm like putting over tall ways. Like, this man is deceptively large. Because Big Boss Man is like so big, but just the proportion of tall way, he like goes stands next to him. He's like, oh, he's much bigger.
I love his choke slam, dude. Like, and we obviously saw that towards the end.
A short, tight little choke slam bomb, almost, like, you know?
Yeah, it's like all like him just forcing them down with as much, like, you know, force as he can. And it's not like a big, you know, getting them up real high and then
there's no need to like show all the people in the crowd how much you've got this guy in the air. All just to drive him on his back and knock the fucking air out of him.
Oh, and he's like running boots as well. Oh, I just, this just brought me so much joy watching this, like, especially having gone down a bit of a rabbit hole to get to this point of like this weird match of, you know, Boss Man in Japan. And then you're just like, this is just everything that I love out of pro wrestling. And that is why it was my favorite match that I watched that week.
Didn't Boss Man go up like to the top and Tawei like caught him with like a top rope brainbuster at one point?
Like, oh, there was that great bit where they were setting up like Tawei was gonna do a superplex, wasn't it? And then he ends up getting cut off. And I don't know whether there was a bit when Kawada kicked the dude in the head, like to set up Tawei's big superplex brainbuster thing. But
yeah,
so good. So many great bits of like Kawada like cutting off people with these great kicks as well. Like, I can't remember what the exact moment was, but there was one where they're in a corner with maybe similar thing to this, and Williams is going to like stop the thing from happening. Kawada just comes in so fast, just boot to the face. Like, Williams turns around 1 second away, like couldn't get better timing, and he obviously looked like he cleaned his clock as well, which makes it all the better.
Hell yeah, man. The only part toward the end that disappointed me is the Boss Man slam we saw was not as, you know, dramatic as the Boss Man slams we may have been used to in the past. He just kind of picked him up and planted him down and kind of made me sad, Chris.
Oh, I always remember the Boss Man slam kind of being like that. Like, it's in no way like a big abyss swing him around kind of thing.
Yeah, but he didn't just pick him up and drop them short like that, like the fucking Tawei choke slam. It's like a little bit bigger, but, you know, that's just me nitpicking.
Well, I thought this whole thing was just delightful.
All right, I'll agree on that point. Hell yeah.
But yeah, this is the exact kind of match where it's so rewarding sometimes when you just go down a weird rabbit hole and you're like, man, this era of wrestling. Like, is there anything more overhyped than 90s All Japan? And then you watch it and you're just like, oh, this is even better than I thought it could be.
Like, oh, this is reasonably accounted for. Like, no one is overselling how good this is.
Yeah. Hilarious. But that was the match, everybody. I hope everyone who, if there are people out there who make a point to watch this match before, listening to the show, I hope you did, and I hope you got the same joy out of it that we did here.
Hell yeah!
But on that note, my friend, anything else for you to add, or any plugs for you to bring to the show here?
Well, let me think. Well, yeah, I have a plug or two. So I am James Van Der Beek on Twitter and Instagram. If you need t-shirt designs, I do that shit. Or if you want to see some funny memes, I got that shit going for you as well. It's at James Van Der Beek, JAIMS Van Der Beek. I am also part of a little wrestling show called SOS Pro Wrestling. We are based out of Tacoma, Washington, but crazy enough, we have a show this weekend up in Seattle at the Old Stove Shipyard Brewery location.
That is a great sounding name for a venue, might I say.
Oh, man, it's pretty rad. And we had a great time last year. They've invited us back. So you can see us for Shipwrecked. It will also be live on IWTV. So you can catch us on the internet if you have such accommodations. Please do join us. It's really fun, really silly, and I do some commentary. But outside of that, thanks for having me, pal.
You're welcome, my dude. That was, might I say also, when it comes to your t-shirt designs, that that one that you did for LA Park during his MLW run was one of my favorite wrestling designs that I ever have seen.
Well, buddy, you want me to give you a little insider tip on that particular design?
Please, please.
I used some of that design. I didn't draw it. I kind of like to fuck around with fonts, mm-hmm. where I take the letters and just like turn them into parts of the design that aren't necessarily letters. So that crown is all made of like letters from a font.
Ooh, man.
Yeah.
I would not have known.
Yeah. Yeah, that's I like cool. to be inventive.
I respect it.
Hey, also, Chris, listen back to me talking about girl stuff and make sure I don't sound like a too big of an asshole and cut off that I expose myself. I'm fine. I'm just kidding around. It's fun to be single, and I'm not definitely man-whoring it up by any means, but man, I mood boosters. Hey, ladies. No, I am kind of drunk at this point, Chris. Cut me off.
I think that everyone will get great joy from this, and I do not think that anyone would think otherwise. I reckon there's something important to be said, as we mentioned, about using this stuff to kind of help you in your journey to get over and get past some things. So. I think there's a lot of good stuff there, and nothing at all that I would be ashamed of in the least, my friend.
Okay, goodness gracious.
And throwing over, I also want to thank the great guys at Social Suplex for allowing me to do this little old show. There's a bunch of other rad wrestling podcasts that you can check out that are on this very network, socialsuplex.com. We've got like Keeping It Strong Style, a New Japan podcast, One Nation Radio, All Things Elite, the Trish and Sarah podcast, Imps WWE Adventure, and there's Tunnel Talk, I think. All right, I think I got to.
Did you say Tunnel Talk?
Yeah. It's not Tunnel Buddies, as I referred to it in the past. I've learned.
Why? Is there a weekly conversation about the joy of tunnels? What's going on?
I am not actually sure what they talk about on their show. Just being completely honest with everyone.
By the time
I've joined you for another show. I need to know what Tunnel Talk is all about.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna do some research, my friend. I'm gonna find out what Tunnel Talk is about.
They must be so excited that we've mentioned the show Tunnel Talk so much at this point.
I really hope that it's a show about urban exploring, and they just go into a bunch of different weird tunnels, you know, just work, find some cool tunnels and talk about them. And maybe somehow get some wrestling into that. I don't know.
Fuck yeah. Do your thing, boys or girls or who are you non-binaries. I don't know.
Watch some wrestling in those tunnels. I don't know.
Oh! We don't pretend to know.
This is what this show is all about. I'm very proud.
Chris, we should do another regular podcast where we don't necessarily talk about art. I miss doing a show with you. It's too fun.
We have a great chemistry, I feel. I very much enjoy these ones, and that's why I've always hit you up to be like, come on, we gotta do this.
I appreciate it, pal. Thanks, guy.
Oh, I love having you on, my dude. And lastly, a little old plug ski, the last remaining one being if you guys would like to get some art in your life, potentially art of a wrestling nature, or some not art of a wrestling nature.
They'll draw frogs.
I will. I haven't even shared that one with you. I did a recent frog, a toad piece, actually, for a toad art exhibition.
Forgive me.
That's currently up in the Brisbane Bar.
Toads.
But I think that this is a great little plug ski for it, because you, right now, can go, if you're in Brisbane, you can go and see said toad art at Netherworld Bar with toad a bunch warriors. Of other rad toad art. And mine may or may not be of a wrestling toad nature, but I also do non-toad art. all sorts.
You have to make clarification. By the way, I do non-toad art.
I mean, that might be an interesting adventure into the future for my art practice. Just really deep dive. Everything is toads.
Toad focused.
It's my toad era, guys. It's, you know.
Picasso had his blue era. You have toads.
Yeah, it's my toad days. It's just is what it is. But if you would like to follow along with any of that, at Chris Things on the Instagram, and christhings.com.au is the place where you can buy the things. You can check out a bunch of all sorts of different things, the matches of the week, the Way of the Blade art prints, different calendars and T-shirts and what have yous. But yeah, if you ever feel like... you know, supporting this podcast, you know, and generally, you know, me, I guess, in a financial sense, you can do so by buying things. You know, I do give you things in as part of receiving these funds. I do actually send them out. So yeah,
he gives you art for money. It's a great exchange. Investigate.
I'm somehow attempting to make this a full-time income. So, yeah, that is an important part of it. Receiving the money for the art, I've learned, because I have to use that money for rent and such. But, yes, it's a fun time. But thank you, guys. Thank you, Jeremy. This has been a fun episode.
Indeed.
Do you have any go-home wrap-up prepared this time that I can talk all over?
No. You know what? Actually, I want to say, everyone, believe in your dreams, follow your heart, and don't let your own insecurities get in your way of your own happiness.
Love it. That's beautiful. All right. Words of wisdom. Let's see you next time, friends, and just ponder on that for the next week until we speak to you again.
Love you, gang.
Bye.
I got you, turkey.
That was delightful.
Agreed.